Okay, isn't it interesting? I've been doing a lot of thinking about this fella Achan and the Israelites and Jacob, or Joshua, excuse me, and how much different this whole scenario is than it would be in our society today. I was talking with Richard the other night about the casting of lots. Well, in New American Standard, the word lot is not in the original text, but it was put in there so that we would understand that there was a mechanism by which God selected from the different tribes that came forward to be assessed by Joshua. And that in itself is really interesting, because God is not a respecter of persons. He views each one of us separately. He doesn't discriminate against age, sex, race, all those different kinds of things that we do, our society does, our judicial system even does. So that's a real plus, isn't it? To know that we're living before a God who judges our individual hearts. And he doesn't compare us. He doesn't even compare us to the Apostle Paul or any of the other famous people. He compares us against his own words. So we should be really thankful for that, because we have the inspired word of God, thanks to the Holy Spirit. And if we're diligent, we study it, we learn it, we apply it, then we can stand justified in our God's sight, if indeed we are faithful. So, basically I'm saying here in this selection and trial that Joshua performs with the Israelites, that there is no scapegoat here. If you really think about it, God just spoke to Joshua. He didn't speak to the Israelites. He spoke to Joshua, told him what to do, and Joshua did it. So the Israelites didn't know what was going to take place. Didn't know there was a type of trial coming. Didn't know that there was only going to be one family. Actually, one person that was the guilty party. It could have been more than one. There's a lot of people that were involved in the taking of Jericho. So, you know, in a war zone, things happen in a war zone. Not everybody's following the rules. And today, it's not like God's watching down to check off those people that are fighting a war according to the Geneva Convention. But here, God was looking down on his chosen people, the Israelites. And he knew the guilty party, and he had a method that he used to expose the guilty party, which was the taking by lots. In the Old King James, and also in the New American Standard, as the selection goes along, start in verse 16. So Joshua rose early in the morning and brought the Israelites near by tribes, and the tribe of Judah was taken. Well, does that mean somebody ran out from the crowd, or Joshua pointed to that tribe, or how was it? Well, God selected that tribe, whatever method he used. New American Standard, a couple of verses earlier, in fact, in verse 14, it says, the Lord takes by lot. So, it's just, let's see, what's the word I want to... an indiscriminate way, I guess, of picking the guilty party. So, in 17, and he brought the family of Judah near And he took the family of the Zerahites. And he brought the family of the Zerahites near, man by man, and Zabadi was taken. And he brought his household near, man by man, and Achan, the son of Carmi, the son of Zabadi, the son of Zerah, from the tribe of Judah, was taken, or identified by God, however that happened to be. And then Joshua said to Achan, "My son, I implore you to give glory to Jehovah, the God of Israel, and give praise to him, and tell me now what you have done. Do not hide it from me." So that brings us up to where we left off last Wednesday night, which is at question number 10. Did Achan hide the truth? So I just read verses 19, and this is what Achan answered in 20. So Achan answered Joshua and said, "Truly, I have sinned against Jehovah, the God of Israel, and this is what I did." Then he goes on. So did Achan hide the truth, yes or no? Carol?
Yes, before he was asked. And no, after he was asked.
Achan sounds like a regular human being, doesn't he? Yeah, he tells the truth when he's exposed. And I've done that myself. Maybe you all have too, a time or two. No one wants to be discovered in a wrong. It's shameful, isn't it? It's shameful when you have to admit, even to yourself, that you sinned, that you did something wrong. And it's especially difficult when you sin against some individual, your wife or a very good friend or even a person on the street, and you need to face that person and say, "I did you wrong. I did this or I did that, and I'm sorry." I have a little something that I got out of a bulletin that Dick Lear wrote a long time ago. It says, "It takes years to build trust, which can be destroyed in a moment." And that's what it is. It's that moment when you do it. And depending on how big it is, you might not ever be able to get that trust back from that person that you sinned against. Sin's a terrible thing. So yes, Achan did hide the truth until he was discovered. But Joshua encourages him. And he says, "Give glory to Jehovah. Give praise to Jehovah, God of Israel." How did Achan do that? By telling the truth. Okay. He said, "Truly, I have sinned against Jehovah," didn't he? And he also said, "And many others suffered because of it." That was the truth, wasn't it? And he continues on telling the truth, I believe, from here on out. "But the many others suffered because of it." So, these others are going to participate in his punishment. I'm sure there's more than one reason why that was done. I know there's more than one reason why it's good to do that. So, Diane, Lindsay, would you read verse 21 for us there in chapter 7?
"When I saw among the spoil a beautiful mantle from Shinar, and 200 shekels of silver, and a bar of gold, 50 shekels in weight, then I coveted them and took them. And behold, they are concealed in the earth, inside my tent with the silver underneath it.
Thank you. So that was the answer to what Joshua asked there in verse 20. He said, and this is what I did. So what did Achan say that he did? Bill?
He sinned against God.
He said that? Yep. Carol?
He named the banned things that belonged to God that he had taken.
He did that too. Did he say anything else? Did he use any other specific words there in that?
Coveted.
He coveted. Yep. He coveted. And he said, I took them. I hid them. He did those three things. So all three of those things are kind of involve a little subterfuge, don't they? He had to be first the coveting, the seeing, the desire to have it, which is the beginning of the sin. Then when sin was fully developed, he said, I took them. So I'm sure he didn't pack them out, you know, in front of everybody. Years ago, I worked up on the WHOOPS projects, the nuclear power plants up in Tri-Cities, Washington, for a whole year. And we had to check in and check out through a gate. We had to log in. We used to call it dropping our brass when we went out. And you'd be surprised how much weight some of the fellows put on during the day. They would walk out wearing their big jackets. One guy walked out with it's called a chain fall, but it's a big come along with a chain, and you can lift stuff up. He'd wrapped it all around his torso. And the way I heard about it was the guy who was walking behind him said he saw the hook hanging out the back of his coat. Well, you're walking out with a whole bunch of guys. So there were constantly things like that going on. We'd have a bomb scare. When you ever have a bomb scare at a nuclear plant, you have to evacuate. So you have to leave everything right where you are. You don't even turn your machines off or anything. You just leave. Well, when we come back, a lot of the tools would be missing. The hand tools. Well, they would find their way out the gate in lunch boxes or whatever. So I took them. That's some of that subterfuge. And that's kind of what Achan did. He didn't say, hey, look here. I'm taking this. I claim it. It's mine. Because he knew he was sinning, didn't he? Then he took it and hid it. He hid this, you could call it spoils or plunder if you want. And the items that are described as a beautiful mantle from Shinar, which is a goodly Babylonish garment. It's like a scarf, very fine scarf. 200 shekels of silver, which I'm kind of guessing was probably loose coins or whatever. And then the gold was a solid bar of gold, 50 shekels in weight. So it was a pretty goodly haul that he took. It wasn't just a little trinkets for souvenirs, was it? Carolee?
I often think that Achan's family had to have known that he had taken that stuff and buried it. It would be really hard to take all of that and not have wondered why there was new ground chilled up under the tent and so forth.
Good point. Good point. Hey, Grandpa. What's the fresh dirt doing in the middle of the tent? Yeah, that's a really good point. That's some more of that subterfuge, isn't it? Some more of that lying. Things that you have to do. You can't just do one little lie. It always ends up being another one, another one, another one. Pretty soon you don't remember where the truth is.
Why else would God punish everybody and take your law there? All the ones that were involved in it, if they were involved, is what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
But they were all punished.
They were, weren't they? Yeah.
Well, except the man's wife. I don't know what happened to her.
Are you sure?
She's not mentioned.
Well, is she part of his family? Then we do know what happened.
That he and his children were punished. Didn't say anything about his wife.
Okay.
What it? Everything. Got them all.
You know, he got them all because he took all the animals and everything. And back then, what were children and wives?
Possessions.
They were possessions, weren't they? You could call them chattel. I'm sorry. That's facts. That's just the way it was. And I'm sure some people think it's some women especially think it's still that way today. But moving on. So, question number 12, who witnesses Achan's sin, his confession, and sentence? Frank, you've got your New Testament up there.
I would say God saw it.
Okay, but I was going to ask you if you'd read verses 22 and 23 there, of course.
Joshua sent messengers, and they ran to the tent, and they were hidden in his tent, and the silver was under it. And they took them from the tent and brought them to Joshua and all the Israelites, and they spread them out before the presence of Yahweh.
Okay. So, question number 12. Who witnessed all the goings-on here? Achan's sin, and also going to witness the sentence. Lee?
All the sons of Israel.
All the sons of Israel. Anyone else?
And God too.
Yeah. Jehovah. They poured them all out before Jehovah, Almighty God. And, of course, before Joshua. So everybody saw it. There was no sneaking around, no hiding, no special favors, which you wouldn't expect because the whole nation of Israel was being punished for this, right? And as far as we can tell, it's all because of the sin of just one man, Achan. All right. Charlie, would you read verses 24 and 25 for us, please?
Verse 24. Then Joshua and all the Israelites took Achan, the silver, the robe, the bar of gold, his sons, his daughters, cattle, donkeys, sheep, goats, tent, and everything he had, and they brought them to the valley of Achor. Then Joshua said to Achan, "Why have you brought trouble to us? The Lord will now bring trouble on you." And all the Israelites stoned Achan and his family, and burned their bodies.
All right, thank you. So what happened to Achan's family there in those two verses, 24 and 25? What was the first thing that happened? Yep, they were taken into the valley. My American Standard Bible said they were taken up into the valley. Probably doesn't make any difference, but it kind of describes the geologic setting. And they were taken up to the valley of Achor, which means valley of trouble. I have a footnote in my New American Standard Bible to that effect. And so they took along with them the mantle, the scarf, the gold, the silver, sons, daughters, oxen, donkeys, sheep, tent, all that belonged to him. They take any cattle up with them?
Yeah.
Yeah, some translations use the word cattle for oxen. Took everything that belonged to him, even his wife.
If he had one,
you say?
If he had one. He might have been wifeless.
Yeah, he might have been a widower. That's certainly true. Yep, that certainly could be true. I stand corrected. And what happened? They stoned the living with stones. Then they burned them to death. They didn't burn them while they were stoning them. They didn't burn them first, then stone them. So is this cruel and inhuman punishment?
Not according to God.
Not according to God. And according to man, it shouldn't be either. They were not tortured by the burning when they were still alive. They were executed by the stoning process, which, if you remember, Larry had described that situation several times, how the people would pick up a stone and each person would throw the stone at. And so maybe some people pick up little stones, maybe some people pick up great big ones. Anyway, it's a very effective way. So whose sentence did the Israelites execute? How do we know that? What does it say in the text?
Joshua pronounced sentence. God told him what to do.
Okay. And the exact words, at least in the New American Standard Bible, says, Jehovah will trouble you. So that's the speaking of the sentence. And question number 14 was, what was the final thing done to Achan? Verse 26. And they raised over him a great heap of stones that stands to this day. And Jehovah turned from the fierceness of his anger. Therefore the name of the place has been called the Valley of Achor, Anchor. Actually, that's Achor, because there's no N is it in there, is it? Or the Valley of Trouble to this day. So what was the final thing that happened to Achan?
Made it a spot when they walked past. There was a lesson in the story for all of the people.
Yeah, right. So the final thing was that he, they, all of his possessions were covered with a heap of stones. And Carolee.
The footnote in my Bible says that Achor was also another form of Achan's name.
Really? That's rather interesting. So does that mean he was predestined to do this dirty deed? Interesting. No. Okay, so I have a little question here. Is this heap of stones, is it a memorial or is it a warning? Okay. What would be the difference? Bill, you want to say something?
Well, a memorial like the Pillar of Absalom or the Tomb of Rachel, that would be something to remember somebody in a good way. This was just a heap of stones. It was not an honorable burial, and it was a lesson. And if it was even remembered afterwards, a heap of stones is going to become part of the earth and not be remembered. Nobody will know where it's at.
Okay. Point well taken. Thank you. So, indeed, it would be more of a warning, because we look at a memorial as trying to remember someone in a very good light or drum up some compassion for someone because of maybe what they suffered. Carol, do you have something else to throw in there?
Well, it made me think of the altars or the stones that were put in the river, and then at Gilgal. They were there so that they remembered the power of God and the lesson of God, that God was with you. This is a lesson no matter what it looks like, this is a lesson that says that God, when you're against God, he knows it, and he will punish you, and it affects the whole nation. But I had something else to say about the, because I thought it had to be his whole family and all of the animals and everything, thinking somebody must have known. But God never challenged anybody else for knowing. But what he took was supposed to be holy and set about apart for God. And what he did was he made it common and unclean, and he contaminated everything of his in a way. And so that may have just been the reason that it was punished, is because it was all unclean now.
Well, that you could look at that, and that's some very good points indeed. But he was punished, number one, because he broke faith with God. He coveted and he sinned against God, broke God's covenant. So, and indeed, the pile of rocks would certainly be a warning over the years. So what was the result then of these activities, these things that were done to Achan?
Hopefully a lesson.
Okay, thank you. Jehovah's fierce anger turned away. In other words, they're good to go now. So, the question number 15 on our roadmap, who executed Jehovah's judgment?
All of Israel.
All of Israel did. Is that because God couldn't? No, of course not. Not at all. So, Joshua and all the people of Israel. I like to call this part ownership. I think I broached that last week. What we have here is a group participation all the way through the trial, the execution of the sentence, everything. Richard?
I also pick out of this a lesson of stealing and lying, because we try to hide it.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I don't know if anybody here has been on a witness stand. I was in a car accident and had done a witness stand. Okay. Your attorney goes over and they'll tell you, you don't get into long sentences as I am, like I'm doing today. You try to answer questions, yes or no. And sometimes, questions that are asked to you, you can answer both yes and no. I know it happened to me. Mm-hmm. I had to answer it the best I could, and then I had to ask my attorney, so then he re-asked the question so that I could answer. You know, it was just a ploy from the other half. But I'm just saying, today, if you're on a witness stand sometimes, and you know, the funny thing is they have you put your hand on the Bible to answer questions as truthfully as possible. But at the same time, you're supposed to just answer your questions in short, either yes or no.
Yeah, that's...
So I just wanted to point out, sometimes... Not all of the truth gets to be said, but here there was hiding, not just lying about it, but they hid it.
Yeah, that's a very good point about our current judicial system. No matter what kind of heinous crime you've done, whether it's speeding or killing someone, you always enter a not guilty plea. And if someone actually confesses straight out, yeah, I did it. I need to be executed, and I'm willing to take that punishment. Here in the state of Oregon, they will not administer that. And they will put you through a trial. And then they still won't execute you if you are guilty. But that's man's justice, isn't it? That's man's system, man's way of doing things. But here, God has a group participation event going on. He's making the nation clean again. Everyone is working together in this particular project. Everyone had a stake. Everyone had a part in this. And to me, this all this is laid out here in verse 25. And this is our takeaway from it. That we need to have ownership in the things that we do. And we need to have ownership in our success as well as our punishment. And take our licks if we deserve them. Carol?
Well, I'm just thinking about all those people who were killed in the battle because of this sin. All of their families felt like the punishment was just and that it had been taken care of. So there's nothing lingering.
Yeah, yeah. Does anyone remember how many people perished in that battle?
About 36.
36, yeah.
It said sons and daughters too. How old were
the
sons and daughters?
All the way from little babies up to adults with sons and daughters of their own. Whatever was part of Achan's family. And that is God's justice. Okay, that kind of wraps up chapter 7. And does anyone have any other comments? Bill?
You kind of alluded to the family knowing about his sin. I think the family inside of his tent knew his wife and his children, and they were told to keep it quiet. His parents and his relatives were not punished. That's probably because they were not party to it.
Sounds to me like kind of a little bit of supposition going on here, Bill.
Well, God said elsewhere, the father shall not be punished for the sin of the children shall not be punished for the father. Well, in a couple of cases, the whole family is destroyed, those that are beneath the father.
Okay.
But if his own father or his brother or sister had been party to it, I have little doubt that they wouldn't have been punished too.
Well, I agree with that part of your statement. We have no way of knowing how many people perish because of this, because God doesn't tell us. And what you're doing is you're supposing, you're putting our own thoughts to this, which we all do, and you may or may not be right. So, duly noted. Okay, we're going to start chapter 8 and continue on. So, things are going to change now, aren't they? Vicki, would you read for us, please?
Sure.
Would you read verse 1 and 2 of chapter 8?
I will. And the Lord said to Joshua, "Do not be afraid, do not be discouraged. Take the whole army with you and go up and attack Ai. For I have delivered into your hands the king of Ai, his people, his city, and his land. You shall do to Ai and its king as you did to Jericho and its king, except that you may carry off their plunder and livestock for yourself. Set an ambush behind the city."
Thank you. So what did Jehovah say to Joshua in verses 1 and 2? What was the first thing he said?
Fear not.
Do not fear. What else did he say? Do not be afraid. Do not be dismayed. Which means to be dismayed means to become broken or cast down. Cast down is like to be discouraged. Or don't be made afraid. That's dismayed. We ever heard Joshua being told this before? Or is this the first time? Carol?
Well, it's
I thought it was the first time, but...
Shame on you. Shame on you. No, this is not the first time. In chapter 1, verses 9,
the same
word he just used. So don't be afraid. Be of good courage. So in verse 9, it says, "Have I not commanded you? Be strong and be courageous. Do not tremble or be dismayed. For Jehovah your God is with you wherever you go." And it goes on. What else does he go on to say there in verses 1 and 2?
"For I've given you the king, the people, the city, and the land."
Carol, you were going to say something too?
Well, before that it says, "Take all the people of war with you." And Isaac would go to Ai. And they had decided amongst themselves the first time that they didn't need to take all of the people.
This is true, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. He says, "Arise, go up to Ai, and you shall do to Ai and its king just as you did Jericho." So does that mean they're going to do it exactly to Ai that they did to Jericho? No. It's more of a generalized statement, isn't it? You're going to beat them to a pulp, just like you did Jericho.
Does your say take all of the people of war?
No. Yeah. I'm not down that far yet.
First one.
So we're just in verses 1 and 2 so far, okay? So, going on. And let's see. In verse 2, Jehovah says to Joshua, "When you go to Ai and take the city, take only its spoil and cattle for plunder for yourselves." Spoil? What does the word spoil mean, besides it's bad and you can't eat it? What is spoil? Spoil is anything that you seize by force. So it's something that happens during an armed conflict. Okay, and plunder. I love that word, plunder. My brother is always telling me, "Come on, grab your plunder and let's go." So what is plunder? In the New King James, it's called for a prey. In the Old King James Bible, I shouldn't say new. But what is plunder? Is it like spoil or not?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's goods taken by force. And in this case, the spoil and plunder is going to be for themselves, isn't it? Okay. I have a little note here to look at Deuteronomy chapter 20, verses 13 and 14. It has to do with this idea of taking spoil and taking plunder. Deuteronomy 20, I'm going to start reading at verse 13. "When Jehovah your God gives it into your hand, you shall strike all the men in it with the edge of a sword. This heading on this chapter is the laws of warfare, talking about taking a city. So you strike the men in it with the edge of a sword. In other words, you kill all the men. Only the women and the children and the animals and all that is in the city, all as spoil, you shall take as booty for yourselves, and you shall use the spoil of your enemies, which Jehovah your God has given you." So, according to the Geneva Convention, you can take all the spoils you want here. That's what Jehovah is describing to the people. You take the things that you conquer from your enemy. Also in the reading in back in Joshua chapter 8 there, in the second verse or so, he tells Joshua that I have given into your hand. What is he given?
City.
I can't hear you.
Ai.
The city of Ai, okay, which involved the king of Ai, involved his people, his city, and his land. Those four things. And he tells Joshua how this is going to happen. He says, set an ambush for the city behind it. So, but I thought he said earlier in those two verses that they're going to take Ai just as they took Jericho. That doesn't sound like the way they took Jericho. So what does that mean? Just as you took Jericho. Charlie?
Does it say anywhere what Ai had around it? They had walls to keep people out? Or?
Yeah. Ai is a walled city. It's kind of up on a... It's not on a hilltop. Like, wasn't highly elevated and where you could walk, go around it on flat ground like Jericho. The information that I was able to find that is kind of on a slope or a hillside overlooking a valley and other hilly or mountainous country around it. Charlie?
Well, when they took Jericho, they took it completely, totally. And when they took Ai, they were to do the same thing.
Okay. Exactly. Carol?
Well, also, God was the deliverer of the battle in both instances. He said, this is how you're going to take Jericho. He says, this is how you're going to take Ai.
Yeah, that's the just as Jericho, isn't it, Lee?
And they're not, the two cities are not very far apart either.
No, no, not hundreds of miles for sure. No, they're fairly close. Okay. So, moving on then. They're going to set an ambush. That's what God tells Joshua that they're going to do this time. So then question number two, I ask, how will the taking of Ai differ from the conquest of Jericho? And I selected the scriptures, verses 3 through 7, for us to get that information from. Ron, would you read that for us, please?
Yeah. So Joshua rose with all the people of war to go up to Ai. And Joshua chose 30,000 men, valiant warriors, and sent them out at night. He commanded them, saying, see, you are going to ambush the city from behind it. Do not go very far from the city, but all of you be ready. Then I and all the people who are with me will approach the city. And when they come out to meet us, as at the first, we will flee before them. They will come out after us until we have drawn them away from the city, for they will say they are fleeing before us as at first. So we will flee before them. And you shall rise from your ambush and take possession of the city, for the Lord your God will deliver it into your hand.
Thank you very much. So it's an ambush, isn't it? That's the number one way that it was different from the taking of Jericho. Because when they took Jericho, they were right out front, up front, and personal. So how many men did Joshua choose to take with him?
30,000.
What kind of men were they?
Warriors.
Valiant warriors. And valiant warriors are kind of like the people that you see in the movies nowadays. And some valiant warriors were described in the Old Testament as individuals that would kill 300 men by themselves. That's pretty valiant. Bill?
Well, my Bible says men of valor.
Men of valor, okay.
It seems a little more valorous than the average warrior. But if you get down into the people that followed Saul and David, and it names off especially valiant people, these were more valiant than the regular warriors.
Yeah, they were cut above, weren't they? They were like our Marines today, right? They're valiant. Okay, so 30,000 men chosen by Joshua. And what did he do with them?
Sent them out at night.
He deployed them at night. Yeah, because this is an ambush, right? You bet. And what instructions did Jehovah give to Joshua about the conflict in these verses?
Don't go very far from the city.
Okay, don't go very far from the city.
But be ready.
But there was another general instruction or permission. I'll put it that way. What permission did they get this time? Diane?
To take the city from behind it.
Yeah.
And they could take the certain items. The spoil is cattle. Let's see. You can take only its spoil, and its cattle is plunder.
Okay. They can take the spoil and the cattle from the conquered city. Does that mean they get to take the women this time? Aren't they spoiled? What's the instruction going to be? What was it at Jericho? You couldn't take any of the physical spoil.
They killed everybody and the children, but that was their command from God when they went into the land, is that they were supposed to kill everybody because they were would be a thorn in their side. They didn't.
Yeah, you've been looking ahead on my notes again, Carol. I don't know what I'm going to do. So, yeah, they cannot take the women as spoil in this particular battle, at this particular city. And in fact, any city in Canaan land, which the Old Testament calls near cities, they are prohibited from taking the women as spoils. So, I asked there in number two, how is the taking of Ai different from Jericho? But how is it the same? What really important way is it the same? Bill?
One thing is that they were to destroy all the people, which they did, and they were to burn the city. But it doesn't say anything about the walls falling down.
Okay, those are valid. That's right. In verse 1, it says, God says to Joshua, I have given it into your hand. In verse 7, which we just read verse 7, says, Jehovah, your God, will deliver it into your hand. So I have given it into your hand. First, we encountered that in chapter 6 and verse 2 pertaining to Jericho. And Jehovah said to Joshua, see, I have given Jericho into your hand with his king and the valiant warriors. So in that respect, it's going to be the same as at Jericho. I have given it into your hand. And then in verse 7 here in chapter 8, Jehovah your God will deliver it into your hand. What's the difference between the statement in verse 1, I have given it into your hand, and the statement there in verse 7, Jehovah your God will deliver it into your hand? What's the difference there? Dean?
Well, what I see is tense. Excuse me. In verse 1, it's past tense. I've given it to you. In verse 7, I will give it to you. And when you think about God, of course, God can talk about things that haven't happened yet as if they happened. But he's the only one that can do that.
Indeed.
And I think that's important. It was important for Joshua to understand that. It's important for us to understand that too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The thing that I picked out of that for the reason is that the people have a part to do. God's done his part. That's why it's past tense. I've given it to your hand. All you've got to do is do your part now and go take it. You do the doing. It's just like you want to be saved. God's done his part. Jesus Christ is a perfect sacrifice. As a sinner, we have to do our part. God gives us salvation, but we have to reach out and take it, don't we? Through our repentance and baptism, and then doing the best we can to live the life that Jesus Christ modeled for us. So there's an activity required by us as Christians. There's activity required by the Israelites here as they prepare to take Ai. So I know that's the first buzzer, but I'm going to call the class right now because this is a really good place to stop. And we will begin at question number 3. Verse 8, next week. Ron?
Kind of interesting because the army from Bethel, or Bethel, came and helped the army of Ai.
Yeah.
They got destroyed too. It's kind of interesting that Joshua didn't say, well, let's go over there while we're at it. Let's go ahead and take Bethel too. He says they're wide open. They have no warriors left.
Yeah.
Doesn't tell us that we've done that. Ai was a brand new city. Well, the first time we'd ever heard of that in the Bible. I'm not getting any response.
Now, I guess no one wants to argue with you. But yeah, as we read through chapter 8, we do find out that they had help.
Ai was actually an ancient city. It's mentioned Abraham camped between Ai and Bethel.
Okay.
When he came through from Haran, when he first made his trip into Canaan.
Okay.
Well, this is an ancient city, been around for generations, hundreds of years.
Yeah, we tend to forget that this area has the family of the Israelites has been in and out and all over the place here before in times past. Thank you very much.